Once you have your prerequisites done, that is, once you've written your case histories, your customer needs, your applications, your value proposition, and your EVC models, once you understand why somebody should talk, meet, or buy from you, and how they make decisions, and you understand the high-level structure of the cold call, you can now put together your cold calling program. In this regard, there are a number of things that you have to do in order to create an effective program. These are things like goal setting, building your support systems and call lists, and strapping on the right attitude that are also important, creating what you might think of as the infrastructure for your program, which is what we're going to look at next. As you can see, there are quite a few elements that have to be in place, but you can also see that you've already built most of your sales aids, such as your case histories, your IBSs, and your EVC models. And you also already know something about the call flow from the high-level view of the cold call that we talked about. So the call flow diagram and worksheet should make a lot of sense when we get there too. But we need to talk about things like goal setting, product knowledge, support systems, attitude, and basic sales skills to round out your cold calling infrastructure. So let's start with your goals and objectives, because that leads to the discussion of performance metrics. And because if you don't know where you're going, then there's no point to building an infrastructure to get you there. As we discussed, for most people, cold calling is all about getting in the door with a decision maker who needs your company's products and services and who wants to talk with you about how you can help. It can also be used for pre-qualifying prospects, doing market research, cleaning up a list, expanding your account penetration, resurrecting a lost or dormant account, and a dozen other purposes. But the big one, the moonshot of cold calling applications, is getting in the door with someone who doesn't know you from Adam, but who you think might need your products to want to talk to you about how you can help. So that's our main goal. This brings us to what we call our axiom of cold calling. That is, if you can stimulate interest very early in the phone call with a good interest-creating remark and then gain permission to ask questions, and if you can then ask good questions that are designed to uncover the prospect's relevant needs for your solutions, create urgency, and together with the prospect, build a compelling case for meeting, then you can get in the door almost anywhere with anyone anytime you need to generate new leads, new sales, and new profits. So building that business case for meeting is clearly one of our main objectives on the call. But actually putting this into practice can seem a little complicated at first. That's, of course, what we're here to help you understand how to do. But if you have any questions or require any help creating or implementing an effective cold calling campaign for your business, please feel free to contact us at leadgen.com at any time. In any event, successful cold calling is enabled by asking good questions. That is, asking questions can be extremely effective when making cold calls if you want to persuade someone to do something, including to meet, to let you get in the door, or to move the sales process forward towards a close. One problem, of course, is that it's extremely difficult to know what questions to ask, and asking the wrong question can get you hung up on as easily as making a declarative statement can. That's why one of the major objectives of this course is to teach you exactly what questions to ask and how and when to ask them. So let's start by looking at an example to illustrate the point that questions are much more effective at persuasion than making declarative statements.
Go to bed.
No.
Go to bed now.
I don't want to.
Go to bed and we can go to the park tomorrow.
I don't want to go to the park tomorrow.
Go to bed and I'll read you a bedtime story.
I don't want to read a bedtime story.
Go to bed and we'll go to McDonald's tomorrow.
I don't want to go to McDonald's. I want to watch Thomas the Tank Engine.
Go to bed or I'm going to call your father.
Fine.
Good night.
Good night.
5 minutes later.
Mommy, I can fall asleep.
Are you ready for bed?
I'm not tired. I want to watch Thomas the Tank Engine.
Really? What's Thomas doing tonight?
He's playing with his friend James.
Really? What are they doing?
They're going to play in the roundabout.
Really? Do you want to tell me about it?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to put on your pajamas and hop into bed so you can tell me about Thomas and James in the roundabout?
Okay.
So was that realistic? For most people who have had kids, either of these scenarios could easily happen, depending on one's mood and whether you have the patience to ask questions. But if you want your child to go to bed, leading her to do what you want by asking good questions seems to work better than telling her what to do. We're going to talk about why questions work better later, but here are the scripts if you want to review the scenarios. Anyway, to be sure, While many cold calling training programs and scripts will encourage the caller to ask a few basic qualifying questions and then ask for the appointment, most scripts are dominated by declarative statements that simply describe the advantages of the product or the vendor, or are outright argumentative, which is basically in the nature of a declarative statement. And of course, if you're new to the job, you've just spent several days or weeks trying to learn the features and benefits of your products and services, so it's natural to want to spew them out on every call. Unfortunately, this is a fatally flawed strategy, if there ever was one. Other approaches are full objection rebuttals that ignore the prospect's real concerns, and still others use so-called tricks of the trade or subterfuge to get around gatekeepers or bully or trick the decision maker into meeting. Unfortunately, as you may have already found, being pushy, asserting your advantages, talking about the product, or ignoring the prospect's concerns tend to be alienating to the prospect, and therefore they tend to be very ineffective. The approach we want you to use instead acknowledges and respects the position and the intelligence of the typical prospect and doesn't treat her like a child, even if you're talking to a receptionist or gatekeeper who, as you've often seen, may actually have a legitimate role in the decision process, even if it's just to block you. And it advocates using a dialogue or interview approach for that call that is more effective and easier to implement than traditional, more argumentative cold calling techniques. To enable you to plan and conduct this kind of call, though, you need to build an effective interview-type script based on an understanding of both your customer's needs and on the value of your product in helping solve them. But you also need empathy and active listening skills, which we'll talk about in a moment, in order to have this kind of conversation. Just to avoid any misunderstanding, though, note that when we talk about creating your interview script, we're not talking about a cold calling pitch, that is, as a one-way sales presentation, even if the prospect explicitly asks you to tell her what you're selling. You have to resist the urge to spew. Rather, as you'll see, you have to conduct something akin to a structured interview that starts with a very brief opening with what you might think of as your 15-second commercial, which you've already built, but it then progresses through a series of questions designed to get the prospect to actually convince herself that she wants to meet with you instead of you convincing her. If there's any trick to the process, that's probably it. That is, we're not going to teach you a magic monologue. Instead, we're going to teach you how to engage the prospect in a mutually productive dialogue, one that results in a qualified prospect wanting to meet with you to talk about her needs and problems and to learn more about how you can help. If you're comfortable with that philosophy, then let's review the agenda where we're going through and see where we are. As we said before, to design an effective cold calling program and make effective calls, you have to create the necessary prerequisites, such as your customer needs, applications, EBC models, and your value proposition, which you use to write your call opening, and an IBS that will get the prospect's attention and initial interest, which hopefully you've already done. You now need to design your cold calling program, which includes things like setting objectives, putting your support systems in place, and getting the right attitude. And then you're going to be able to script out your cold call and start generating appointments. If you follow this process, this approach will enable you to identify and qualify prospects more quickly, convert gatekeepers and voicemail into door openers, and stimulate initial interest at higher levels while generating appointments that are far more likely to stick and sales that are far more likely to close and close sooner. As a result, you should be able to generate more sales at higher prices in less time and with less effort. So let's keep going and talk about the objectives for any given campaign. There's a bit of a chicken and egg problem when it comes to the issue of which came first, the objective or the list. This is because you can't implement a strategy to call a group of prospects if you can't acquire a list, but you can't research a list if you don't know what your objectives and target market are. Philip Kotler defines this as the access problem. That is, you have to be able to access your market in order to target it. As a result, sometimes deciding to do a campaign is dependent on whether you can acquire or research a good list, and sometimes you decide to call a particular list simply because it's the only one you have. Setting the which came first issue aside for a moment, if you want to call on businesses, you have to have a list of companies or suspects. These lists can be acquired by purchasing them from brokers or lead services, scraping names from the internet, collecting business cards at networking events, or building from secondary sources. But the leading commercial databases like Sales Genie, ZoomInfo and Data.com, we found, are the best, and LeadGen.com can also provide you a list if you need as well. At the very least, your list should have a company name and phone number, but many lists provide much more information, such as executive names, industry address, number of employees, job titles, departments, email addresses, number of PCs, sales, multiple contacts, and more, maybe even cell phone numbers. Make sure to scrub your list to remove competitors and existing clients or prospects, and use the prospect's website as well as LinkedIn and other professional networking sites to help gather intelligence on each contact before you call. Keep in mind that most lists that you buy have significant problems. The best lists are around 30% out of date insofar as the individuals on them are concerned, and most are much worse. Email lists often contain honeypots and other traps that often get you tarred as a spammer. Many lead lists have been worked to death, and so the targets are unresponsive, and most lists are incomplete. They don't have all the targets you want, or all the job titles, or all the decision makers, if they even have any. But the biggest problem is that most don't. In fact, by definition, they typically can't identify the decision maker for your particular product or service. At best, they can give you the phone number for the company and maybe their direct line, and they may give you a few executive names, but they can rarely tell you who is the actual user or decision maker for a particular solution. This is one of the reasons why techniques like email marketing and direct mail have such low response rates, because the email or letter isn't going to someone who actually cares about the problem, so it just gets round filed. At least with cold calling, you can ask to be transferred to someone who's involved, or, as you'll find when you get really good at cold calling, you can actually create a decision maker out of thin air by asking the right questions. But you can't do this by broadcasting your message. For this reason, we recommend that you approach the list problem not with an acquisition solution, but with the goal of building a good list in-house. That is, you should use commercial lists to seed your database, but your main strategy should be to use your calls as a way to clean up the list and add good contact information as you go along. Okay, so now that you have your list, let's move on to goal setting. In addition to your strategic targeting and revenue goals, make sure that you set reasonable but well-defined objectives that you'd like to achieve on each call, and above all, for filling your funnel. And you may also want to establish KPIs that you'd like to achieve at the end of each day, week, and month. By evaluating results and comparing them to your preset goals and objectives, it'll help you figure out if you're being productive or not. If you're not meeting or better exceeding your goals, then you'll need to evaluate and modify part or all of your cold calling lists, script elements, collateral material, strategy, calling technology, attitude, or environment. As we said earlier, the main objective of any cold calling program is to generate qualified sales leads and appointments that put viable prospects into your sales funnels, ones that eventually result in new sales and new revenue, which is the main goal. The objective is not to dial a phone, nor is it to send out literature or invite people to a webinar or to demos, even if that's all you're asked to do. Cold calling is all about ringing the cash register. Now here's the tricky part. Since the principal measures of success for a cold calling program are revenue and profitability, then your company's funnel report, shown on the next slide, is actually the principal way to gauge its success. That is, while it may not seem logical to measure the performance of your cold calling program by looking at what's happening to the leads after they've been handed off to the sales department, if you want to drive your cold callers or yourself to maximize revenue, then this is the only way to do it. Think of it this way. If it's the job of the cold caller to get your company in the door with qualified prospects, then how many qualified prospects you're in the door with and what happens to them after that is the most important thing to coach your cold caller about. It's not to talk about dials, contacts, and appointments. It's to talk about what's in the sales funnel. As you can see here, using the approach advocated by Miller and Hyman in strategic selling, suspects, or names on a list, if you will, are all above the funnel, and getting them into the funnel is the job of the cold caller, where they can enter as see prospects or opportunities. By this logic, the more needs you uncover as you're getting in the door, the higher will be the initial probability of closing, which is one of the reasons why we focus on uncovering needs during the lead generation process. But it also illustrates why the funnel report is the primary measure of the results of the cold calling program. This also points out one of the major flaws in how many CRM systems are used today. For example, many companies have their cold callers work on leads, but when something becomes an opportunity, it becomes the responsibility of the sales staff, and it then becomes invisible to the cold callers. The problem with this is twofold. First, creating an opportunity doesn't occur at any single given moment in time, and then it becomes something that's thrown over the wall to sales. Rather, it can take weeks and often multiple contacts with multiple decision influencers to create an opportunity. So disabling the opportunity function for your cold callers cripples their ability to do their job properly. Second, it makes the output of their work impossible for them to see, and therefore they can't measure their results. Using the funnel report to measure results is also the only way that you can compare the profitability of different lead generation methods and bridge the gap between marketing and sales. This is because it's the only way to standardize the denominator. That is, if you say that a click-through from an email program, an attendee at a webinar, a contact at a trade show, a business card from a networking event, a call-in from an inbound program, and an appointment from a cold-calling program are all leads, then you're going to ignore the additional costs of qualification and conversion to an appointment when you try to calculate and compare your average cost per lead or cost per appointment from each method. This also, therefore, means that you can't calculate and compare the profitability of each method. But if you use the funnel report as the standard measure of output from each of your marketing mix methodologies, then you can always compare apples to apples. That is, using the funnel report, you can compare, for example, the cost and quality of leads you get from your email campaign to the cost and quality of appointments you produce from cold calling, because you're forced to include the added cost of qualification and conversion to an appointment of the email leads in order to make the comparison. In any event, it's important that the principal measure of results for your cold calling program be the value of the leads in the funnel report. Any other definition of a lead is misleading. Before something gets into your funnel, though, of course, it has to be prospected, and so tracking opportunities that you or your cold callers are currently working on is the purpose of the pipeline report, the main report for managing your cold calling program. The only attribute that some cold callers really need to report on their pipeline is the temperature of the suspected opportunity, which tells you subjectively how interested the prospect is in getting together and in maybe doing something. But what really matters is that you describe the prospect's need, problem, dissatisfaction, or unmet goal, and that you do it in their words. If you need to let that sink in, let's talk about it for a moment. That is, one of the key factors that defines something as a lead is that the prospect has a need, although there are others, such as that they want to talk to you about how you can help, and one other that we'll talk about in a moment. But if they don't have a fundamental problem that they're trying to solve, then the subsequent appointment is basically going to be a fishing expedition, if not a complete waste of time. If your salespeople are willing to go on fishing expeditions, fine. But if you want to maximize your marketing ROI, then you need to uncover some need, pain, problem, or unmet goals on your calls and get the prospect to acknowledge that she wants to do something about it, ideally with you. Depending on the structure of your team, product, and program, other factors can also be formally reported, such as how urgent it is for the prospect to do something about it, whether they have budget to do something about it, whether you're talking to a decision maker or decision influencer or not, whether there is a viable application, whether there is a competitor you have to unhook, and any other qualifying criteria you want to impose. In our experience, however, there is one additional attribute of a lead that is actually the most important one and that therefore needs to be reported. Surprisingly, it's one that rarely appears on CRM systems, and we've rarely encountered programs that include it, but it represents the action step in our AIDA model, or what we refer to colloquially as the concrete step. As we'll talk about later, getting a prospect to take a concrete step to move the process forward is one of the most important parts of creating a lead that's qualified. But for now, just make sure that it appears on your pipeline report. Anyway, only after measuring forecasted revenue in your funnel and the state of your pipeline and measuring lead quality, which we'll discuss on the next slide, should you even consider measures of activity such as dial rate, like dials per hour or dials per day, connect rate, dials per contact, and appointment rate. But we do need to talk about a few issues associated with these measures of activity. First, it's an extremely bad idea to measure the performance of a cold caller or of a program based on dial rate or dials per hour. And while many program managers pride themselves on getting 20 or 30 dials per hour out of their telemarketers, if you consider that it might require 5, 10, or an even 20-minute conversation to persuade a prospect to meet with you, it becomes clear that focusing on dial rate is illogical. assuming that the caller talks to a decision maker on every three dials and that it takes a minute to dial and document the call and 5 minutes to have a decent conversation, your 20 dial per hour requirement just mandated that your callers jam 140 minutes of activity into each 60-minute hour. Second, tracking the contact rate requires that you define what you mean by a contact. In most programs, a conversation with a receptionist or even an executive secretary won't count as a contact, despite the fact that they can often provide extremely valuable information, and either one of them can block you, making them true decision makers. So this approach discourages the conversation and information gathering, and therefore it results in fewer and lower quality leads. Finally, focusing on the number of leads rather than on their quality and potential revenue virtually guarantees that you're going to sacrifice quality for quantity. So overall, measuring activity should be approached with extreme caution. You don't have to avoid them altogether, but they should be significantly downgraded in priority. For example, if you're not getting the number of appointments you want, it's sometimes okay to look at the number of contacts you're getting. But it's far more important to look at the quality of those conversations, because otherwise, you're just going to get a lot of bad leads. Likewise, then, if you're not getting the number of contacts that you want, the worst thing you can do is obsess over the number of hours, dials, or dials per hour you're getting. There are a dozen other factors that are more important, and fixing the dial rate will only get you more dials, not more appointments. Because remember, management gets what it measures. As we alluded to a moment ago, in B2B cold calling, call quality and lead quality are far more important than the number of leads or appointments produced, despite how you may be managed on a day-to-day basis. And so we need to set goals for lead quality as well as for results and productivity. The key issue, of course, is that producing bad leads not only wastes time, effort, and money spent producing them, it wastes the field sales expense associated with following them up, as well as the expectations of revenue. Sending a sales rep out on a bad call or going on one yourself means that he or she or you can't be doing something more productive, which represents an opportunity cost, and it often alienates the prospect too. So we need a good way to assess the quality of the leads as well as the calls that produce them. To be sure, the concept of lead scoring is all the rage today. Marketers often delight in devising complex schemes for rating the leads they produce, and many of these schemes are just junk, just as the systems developers delight in building the infrastructure, most of which is irrelevant to the salespeople who get the leads. That's not to say that lead scoring can't be helpful, but you have to be extremely careful not to let the tail wag the dog here. Setting goals for lead quality and measuring performance against those goals are complex tasks. It's not simply just a matter of rating a few recommended attributes on a scale of 1 to 10. Likewise, one of the most popular traditional lead qualification schemes, called BANT for Budget, Authority, Need, and Timing, while qualitatively better, often is extremely misguided in its use. For example, many excellent leads will fail this test, particularly those where you can get an in with a coach, a buyer role from strategic selling, who has no budget, authority, need, or timing, but who wants to help you sell something nonetheless. It misses the application definition process, which is often necessary as much to get in the door as it is to persuade a salesperson to go on a call. It misses the reality of collaborative decision making, and it ignores the existence of technical buying criteria. And it completely denies the fact that it's often the responsibility of the salesperson to justify the budget, escalate the contact level, or create urgency, not the cold caller. So how do you approach the problem of measuring the quality of your leads and the calls that produce them? In our view, part of the solution is to define a rubric that is actually meaningful to your organization, being careful to fully account for potential gaps between marketing and sales. Specifically, whatever leads are produced by the lead generation process have to be directly useful by the salespeople who use them. Otherwise, you will need to have a second process to qualify them and potentially book the appointment. Usually, that means that there is a legitimate need and a confirmed appointment, either by telephone or in person, but your company may have additional criteria. Second, and this is the most important part, is to acknowledge in your rubric the fact that what qualifies as a lead one day, or a good lead one day, to one salesperson may not qualify as a good lead on another day, or to another salesperson. That is, your lead qualification criteria must be dynamic, and it must be able to adjust the quality rating of a lead according to the variable acceptance criteria of the people who have to cover it. The easiest way to understand this problem is with the classic case of the salesperson who will cherry-pick leads when he's ahead of quota, but who will shoot at anything that moves when he's behind. A lead quality measurement system must take into account the highly variable acceptance criteria of the individual salespeople who have to follow them up. This suggests that call quality can't be measured, but we've found that the better solution is to have good real-time communication between the cold caller and the sales rep and a flexible acceptance process, along with the ability to kick leads back and forth between the telemarketer and the salesperson within your CRM, in the absence of a dynamic lead measurement system. Looking now at what should define lead quality, the first and most important attribute of the lead is that there is some kind of a need. This is generally defined as a problem, a pain point, a challenge, a dissatisfaction, or an unmet goal of the prospect that you were able to uncover during the call and that you might be able to help with. As you can tell, this definition suggests that you have to be really careful. First, for many companies, you have to watch out that you don't force your cold callers to define it in terms of a need for your product or service, because this ignores many valid opportunities that could easily be converted. Second, remember that all needs are always in some state of satisfaction, so you could easily miss the whole unhooking a competitor opportunity or the latent need opportunity if you define it too narrowly or the wrong way. The solution is to define a set of qualifying problems or unmet goals that your products and services can address and that you'd be willing to go after, such as the ones for LeadGen.com that you see here. This gives you, that is the cold caller, something to look for that you might actually be able to find. Well, guess what? You already have this. You wrote it when you were building your prerequisites, that is, the set of needs and problems that customers can solve with your products and services that you wrote before are precisely what you should be using to gauge the quality of the leads and of your calls. If you've uncovered one or more of these needs and gotten the prospect to admit that she has these problems and you've persuaded her that she wants your help to solve them, then it is generally considered to be a high-quality call and a high-quality lead. And while you can and should add a few other attributes, such as urgency or budget, specifying the decision process or quantifying the benefit, uncovering an actionable need is the key to producing a high-quality lead. A qualifying need is at the core of a good lead, and so finding a few of them is the primary function of cold calling. Therefore, it is the principal attribute of a good lead. Just as important as the existence of a qualifying need, though, is getting the prospect to acknowledge it and be interested in doing something about it. This is something that is unfortunately overlooked in virtually every lead scoring scheme we've ever seen. That is, it's generally useless to the sales process if you know that there's a need. It actually only matters if the prospect has told you that she has a need and is interested in solving it, ideally, although not necessarily, with your products or services. Not only is this articulation of the need key to demonstrating lead quality, it inextricably links call quality to lead quality, because getting the prospect to admit that they have a need and getting them to want to solve it, ideally with your help, and then getting them to take some concrete step to move the process forward is a skill you can and should develop. And again, as you can see, this deliberately echoes the AIDA concept we discussed before of attention, interest, desire, and action. Obviously, this suggests that there's an application for your products or services, which you recall is defined as the use of a product or service to solve a particular problem. And some campaigns explicitly require their cold callers to look for applications. So let's take a little side trip to talk about it. As you remember, an application, and therefore an appointment to discuss one, only makes sense in the context of a prospect having a problem or need and you having a solution, as shown in the diagram above. But some lead generation programs require the cold caller to find or define the application on the way in the door. This can be enormously difficult for some cold callers with some solutions. For example, if you offer system development services, it's one thing to solicit backlog from the IT director, but it's another thing entirely to find unmet needs that you can fulfill by talking to potential users. That's not to say that it can't be done. Quite the contrary, this technique is designed to enable you to do it. We just don't go into it that much depth in this version of the course because it would take too much time. But the application definition process is an important concept in lead generation because it represents what the prospect is actually going to do with your solution. This implies that it has value, and therefore it defines how it's going to show up on the P&L. In any event, it's one thing to find a need, but if the prospect isn't interested in considering doing something about it with your product or service, then it isn't going to become a good appointment. It's just a howdy call, or at best, a dog and pony show. Anyway, this leads us to the final element we have to talk about with regard to measuring lead quality, which is the concept of a concrete step. Specifically, it turns out that, in general, no cold calling activity, or for that matter, no marketing or sales activity, actually means anything whatsoever unless you can get the prospect to do something concrete to move the sales process forward. That is, just like a need doesn't exist unless the prospect tells you that it exists, the sales process can't be said to be moving forward unless the prospect does something, expends some energy, invests some time or political capital, does some work, or spends some money to move the sales process forward. This is the other key to qualifying something as being a good lead. Now, this may strike you as counterintuitive. After all, we're all used to sending the prospect something or inviting them to a webinar or a demo or getting them to give us their email address or even continuing the conversation as a necessary step in the process. And we think of it as an indication of success if he agrees. And how often does call so-and-so to follow up or touch base appear on our calendars as an indication of progress? It turns out, and you probably already know this if you've been selling for any appreciable time, that none of these events or actions suggest anything whatsoever in terms of the success of your cold calling process or your sales process, for that matter. They're all you just doing something that looks like progress, but without going into the science behind it, actually aren't correlated with success at all. If the prospect doesn't expend some energy or spend some time or money, it's all just sound and fury, signifying nothing. Obviously, therefore, tracking these nice noises on your system is a waste of time and expectations, and asking your cold callers or fulfillment staff to indulge them is equally pointless from the perspective of demonstrating or measuring success. In fact, it turns out, if you do all the work as the result of the call and the prospect does nothing as a result of the call, then the call should generally be considered to be a failure. That is, if they do nothing after the call, then it illustrates that they're not committed to the process. But if they expend some energy, spend some time or money or political capital, and you can get them to do it, then it's a pretty good demonstration of your cold calling skills or sales skills and that they are committed to the process. And so getting the prospect to do something, even if it's something arbitrary or make work, should be a major objective on every cold call. And it's the best indicator of call quality there is. To be clear, make work is not the ideal concrete step. Instead, you should devise a set of steps that you'd like your ideal prospect to take as they become a customer, as those are much better candidates for concrete steps. For example, you may want them to fill out a form that describes their needs in more detail. You may want them to involve other people who have to implement the solution in the planning process. You may want them to put together an implementation plan or a business case to help justify and plan the purchase. Or you may want them to provide you with information that helps you put a proposal or implementation plan together. In our experience, if you can get the prospect to take a concrete step to move the sales process forward, such as sending you some information about his needs or situation, filling out a form, starting a business case, participating in a needs analysis, giving you an affirmative referral to another decision influencer, or taking some action that requires the expenditure of time, effort, or money, then the cold call should be considered to be successful, even if you have not yet gotten the appointment. On the other hand, if the prospect doesn't actually do anything as the result of the call other than possibly agree to talk again, then it should be considered to be a failure. And that is a, if not the, key performance indicator for the success on a cold call. Although it may seem somewhat arbitrary, writing down and counting what concrete actions that you can get the prospect to perform as a test of her interest at any stage in the sales cycle is an important tool for both measuring your performance against your goals, for planning your calls, and for establishing and maintaining momentum. In a sense, you could argue, despite the discussion of uncovering a need as required lead qualification criteria earlier, that cold calling is graded on a pass-fail scale. If you can get the prospect to do something, that is to take a concrete step, you pass. If not, you fail, even if she admits she has a need. Getting her to grant an appointment is just one of those things to get her to do. But there are lots of other things that can be just as indicative or predictive of success, as long as you can get the prospect to do them and not have you do all the work yourself after the call. So write up potential concrete steps that are meaningful to your sales process and keep the list handy so you can refer to it when you're making your calls. While we're in the process of making lists, this might be a good time to make up a list of objections that you get or expect to get on your calls. Here are a few of our favorites, with not now or postponement being by far the most popular. We're not going to go to do anything with them right now, but we want to have this list for later, and now's as good a time to write them up. If you want to write a brief paragraph describing each one, don't bother. We don't care, because we don't believe in objections. Just kidding. If it'll make you happy, go ahead, but don't send it to us because we won't read it. While we're on the subject of things we don't care about, most companies equate sales training, which focuses on how to sell, with product training, which focuses on understanding features and advantages. But they are entirely different and they serve two distinct purposes. Whoever is making cold calls should have a little product knowledge, of course, but oddly enough, this is an instance where a little learning is a dangerous thing. It turns out that when it comes to prospecting, as we said before, it's actually more important to understand your product's applications, how your product can be used to solve specific problems, than it is to understand its features, which are capabilities that exist regardless of whether they're being used or not. In fact, early in the prospecting process, understanding your product's applications is more important than understanding its advantages, which are how it performs better than an alternative. This is because advantages don't make any sense outside of the context of an application in a competitive setting, and understanding applications at least helps you know how to look for one. In fact, talking about product features is actually harmful on a cold call, even if the prospect asks you to do it, and it distracts the prospect from talking about her needs, and so it virtually disables the cold call, the main purpose of which is to uncover needs and find the benefits of using the product that your prospect will appreciate. Another way to look at this problem is to consider what most cold callers do, which is talk about their product's features and advantages, expecting the prospect to visualize how they can use it. What could be a sillier expectation? If you talk about the product, the only thing that the prospect is going to think about is how much it costs, which simply makes the objection a self-inflicted wound. Avoid talking about the product as much as possible. It can only unsell the deal. Okay. Let's move on to attitude and the four personal attributes you need to bring to the cold call. Because this is an introductory course, we're not going to go into a great deal of detail on these, nor are we going to have any exercises on them, but we do need to mention them. If we recall that one of the main purposes of the cold call is to uncover needs, then empathy, or the ability to feel another person's pain, is the most practical emotion you can have. To the degree that you can design or at least control your emotions, strapping on some empathy and trying to feel the other person's pain is going to get you quite far in this business. The best way to think about how to do this is to imagine that you're talking to a friend and you know they're hurting about something. So you put your arm around their shoulder and you ask them to tell you what's bothering them. They might resist, but of course, if you give an example of someone you helped who was in a similar situation, you have a good chance of getting through or simply offer to listen. But even more important, as you know, is that asking questions that get them to open up and listening to their answers, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes, are the keys to getting them to tell you what their problem is. And the same thing works on a cold call. Calm urgency reflects the purposefulness of what you're doing, the urgency of meeting your goals as well as solving the prospect's problems. A good analogy is the duck that looks calm above the water, but who's paddling like mad below it. Letting the prospects go on for hours talking about their needs is fine, but in the back of your mind, you need to remember to keep the process moving forward. Commitment is simply how you overcome rejection and setbacks, remembering that an effective technique and continuous process improvement will eventually get you where you need to go. In this regard, you should understand that if you debug your failed calls, eventually you'll correct your mistakes and achieve success. This is because, as it turns out, debugging your failed calls and improving your technique actually involve a very simple and straightforward process. For example, if you think about the major branch points in the call flow, that is the diamonds on the flow chart, you can use these as high-level checkpoints for gauging progress on a call. So you therefore need to ask yourself, did you actually get the prospect's attention? If yes, fine. If not, you need to go back and make sure you actually have their attention. Then ask yourself, did you actually stimulate initial interest? Fine, but if the prospect is just listening with half an ear or not at all, then you have to go back and try to stimulate their initial interest again if they'll give you the chance. Then you have to ask yourself, did you uncover needs, create urgency, position your product as the solution, and get the prospect to agree to meet? If yes, congratulations. If not, then you have to ask more questions to uncover needs that would motivate them to do it. And did the prospect agree to take a concrete step to move the process forward? If so, great. If not, then you have to build more benefits, position yourself as the solution better, and create more urgency to solve the problem. There are debugs like this at the finer levels of the call that we're going to get into later, but the key is to think of the cold call as a linear process running from top to bottom on this flowchart. If you run into a wall, don't go around it, don't go under it or over it. Instead, go back one step in the process and fix what you didn't do right the first time. Then you can move forward. So let's make that absolutely clear. You cannot go over, under, around, or through a barrier to success when it comes to cold calling. You have to fix the problem with your technique. Then you can persuade the prospect to do what you want her to do. So let's talk briefly about support systems. There are a number of support systems, technologies, and tools that can help you be more effective and efficient in your calling. Let's review those now, and then we'll get back to writing the rest of your script elements. Some people pick up the phone and finger dial each prospect. This is an effective but inefficient method of calling many people over many hours, but having some type of calling automation solution brings efficiency and consistency to cold calling. Using inexpensive off-the-shelf solutions to generate more calls, manage call results, remind you of next steps, sending out emails, and generating customizable reports can double or triple your contacts or more as long as you keep the data clean and manageable. If you don't have the calling technology solutions that you need, or at least a CRM with a dialer, we can provide you with one and help you get them set up. It's important that you have a relatively quiet space from which to conduct your calls. Remember that bare walls and floors will create echoes and may distort the call, making it difficult for your prospect to understand you and for you to understand your prospect. Many people find it helpful to have a mirror or a picture of themselves in front of them to remind them to smile, as the underlying attitude often comes through on the call. Having a place for a rebuttal guide, call flow, or script elements, as well as your notes, is also important, so you don't have to go searching for them. It's vital that you dedicate a certain amount of time for cold calling if it's part of your job. If you don't dedicate the time, then it won't get done. Depending on your needs, it may be a half day per week, or it may be 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Whatever it is, make sure that you put it on your calendar and have the discipline to do it. Above all, nothing should be a higher priority or be allowed to get in the way of your cold calling. This is because, despite our belief in the power of the technique, there is always a certain amount of luck involved in cold calling, and cold calling, like any sales job, is subject to the law of large numbers. This means that you might have a dry spell, but if you debug your pitch and keep calling, eventually you'll get the hits. So when you run into a rough patch, don't get up from your chair unless it's going to go get coaching. All things considered, it makes sense that the more you call and the more time you put into it, the more likely you'll come across people with needs that you can satisfy, providing that your calls are effective in uncovering them. That said, keep in mind the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. If you're not being successful, but you're doing the right things, keep doing them. But if you're not being successful because you're doing the wrong things, change what you're doing. How do you know whether you're not being successful? Because you're in a dry spell rather than because you're doing the wrong things? Refer back to the slide on debugging. Some laypeople, and business owners too, believe that the ability to sell is something you're either born with or you're not. But it turns out that it's really a learned skill. It starts with learning what works and what doesn't, which is what you're studying in this course. Once you've finished writing your script elements, practice them with someone by role-playing with them or by standing in front of a mirror and delivering your key statements. Eliminate all the ahs, ers, and ums. Learn what words need to be emphasized and where to slow down or speed up. Learn to ask questions and how to shut up and listen to the answer and then to use that answer to formulate your next question. Practicing these few skills will dramatically increase your success rate. When you practice making cold calls and make them live as well, one of the most important skills to hone is how to listen effectively, sometimes referred to as active listening. The process is quite simple in theory, but it can be difficult to do in real time. This is because we often get caught up in trying to make a point, but as we discussed earlier, telling ain't selling. And so if you're trying to make a point, you're already headed down the wrong path, and listening becomes an even bigger problem. Obviously, one of the most important factors in being able to listen effectively is to have prepared your questions ahead of time so you don't have to think about what you're going to say. Practicing them and understanding the call flow ensures that they'll be second nature when the time comes to ask them. But how can you go through a scripted series of questions and simultaneously adjust your questions in response to the prospect's answers, many of which can't be anticipated? The solution is to understand that the call flow, which we're going to talk more about later, is a guide, much like the bumpers that little kids use at a bowling alley. The goal is to get the ball all the way down the lane, or in our case, build a business case for a meeting. As long as somewhere along the line you uncover needs, identify consequences, create urgency, build benefits, gain your commitments, and so on, you'll get where you need to go. But if the prospect throws you a curve, the call flow is designed to get you back on track. That's why we're going to have to tell you to keep a copy of it next to you when you make your calls. Another analogy that might help is the idea of a toolbox, with your questions and other script elements being the tools. Obviously, you may not need all of them on every job, but you have to have them just in case. The point is to get the job done to generate a good lead, not to use all your tools. Guiding the prospect to the conclusion you want her to reach is what matters, and you don't get credit for sticking to your script or for asking every possible question on it. Anyway, getting back to the question of listening, if you don't adjust what you're saying in response to what the prospect says, then you are going to miss opportunities to uncover needs that could drive the process forward, and you will also fail to deal with issues that can prevent it. This suggests that active listening is a dynamic process and your questions can't be scripted explicitly. That's why the call flow was created to be flexible, as you'll see. Even so, you still need to hear, register, and respond to the prospect's answers to your previous questions, and then use that information to formulate the next thing you say or ask. To do that, you start by asking a good question that is designed to uncover the prospect's needs and problems and so on, which we'll cover in the next section. But you then stop talking, clear your mind, and instead of thinking about what you're going to say next, simply listen to the prospect's answer. Now, here's the most important part. Write the prospect's answer down. After all, if you asked a good question, then she probably just told you about a need, and so you want to add it to the business case for the meeting. We'll even give you a form on which you can write their answers in a few moments, because writing it down and writing down what she says is that important. Next, you may opt to checkpoint the prospect's answer by saying something like, "If I understand you correctly, you have a concern with such and such area of your business," echoing back what she just told you, and turn it into a question by asking, "Is that right?" Let her answer, and when she does, you can then formulate your response in the form of another IBS and a new question, and then ask that. But listening is key to cold calling. If you don't listen to what the prospect has to say, you will fail. In any event, there are two excellent formats that you can use for keeping notes while making cold calls. Which one you use depends on which you feel more comfortable with, as either can work well. But you have to take notes on your call, so let's talk about how to do it. The first format for writing down what the prospect says is called a spider chart. A spider chart is simply an ad hoc diagram that you draw on a blank piece of paper as you're talking to the prospect, where you put needs in rectangular boxes and you put benefits in circles along with the costs or values of each need or benefit. Use lines to connect the boxes or circles to show their relationship with one another, as shown in this example. If you use this approach, the business case elements will tend to jump right off the chart, whether you're justifying an appointment or a sale. Another format is the cold call worksheet. This is a more structured format, one which we therefore prefer, that can also help guide you through the call. This is because it's keyed directly to the call flow diagram that we'll discuss later. The cold call worksheet has specific spaces for you to list the needs and problems you uncover, along with the stakeholders of the problems and their costs. It also has space for you to write the benefits people are looking for, who benefits by solving the problems, and what it's worth to the various beneficiaries as well. It also has a place to note the competitive environment and any factors that make solving the problem more urgent. It has a place for you to note the decision process and decision criteria, and it has a place for you to write the concrete steps that the prospect is going to take to move the process forward, as well as any steps that you might have to take. The advantage of a format like this, of course, is that it makes you very conscious of what you're looking for on the call and what you're trying to do. And if you use it correctly, it forces you through the important steps of the lead generation process, uncovering needs, building benefits, and quantifying the value of each, creating urgency, mapping out the decision process and criteria, and especially reminding you to get the prospect to do something concrete to move the process forward. Taking good notes on a call is a critical skill, and while you may choose not to take notes on calls where you don't talk to a decision maker or a decision influencer, not recording their needs when you do is a big mistake. Think of it this way. If you send a salesperson out on a call, which would they rather open the conversation with? As I understand it, you mentioned to our telemarketer that you were concerned with the low close rate and long sales cycle you had on the leads from your recent email marketing program. Is that correct? Or, why am I here? Obviously, the former makes for a much better appointment, but it can't happen if you don't write the prospect's needs and problems, so use the cold call worksheet, or at least the spider chart. Not coincidentally, getting back to listening skills for a moment, it can seriously undermine the call to ask a prospect a question and not deal directly with their answer. On the other hand, if you write down what they say, especially in a chart like one of these, you're much more likely to take it into account and use it to both formulate your next question and to build the business case for meeting. This enhances rapport and credibility and the overall quality of the call as well. So again, more reasons to use a worksheet. In fact, we sometimes will advise callers to let the prospect know that they're writing down what they said if the prospect starts describing a need, problem, or objective. Doing so gives you time to write the notes, it enhances your credibility, and it often causes the prospect to elaborate on an important point. Along those lines, another technique that you'll want to employ is called checkpointing. Checkpointing can also buy you time to write notes. It can show that you're listening, and it can even be used to handle objections. Checkpointing is where you repeat back to the prospect what they just said to you in order for you to confirm your understanding of what they said. This cements it in your mind, of course, while it shows the prospect that you were listening, although you have to be careful not to overdo it. It also, by the way, prepares them for your response, which is especially important if you're going to contradict them in some way. To be clear, we're not talking about using the feel, felt, found method where you might say something like this on the next slide. I understand how you feel about the price, for example. Many people have felt that way before, but what they found after they purchased the product was that it was worth far more than they had thought. As you can see, while this acknowledges the prospect's comment or objection, it does so only to contradict it. It doesn't deal with it. In fact, it basically ignores it, and so it doesn't work. We're also not talking about paying lip service to the prospect's responses. For example, it's not uncommon for a script to have you ask a question and then tell you to say great regardless of the answer and go on with your pitch. You have to take the prospect's statement or question into account and use it to formulate your next question so you can continue moving through the lead generation process. If not, then you'll simply lose them and lose the opportunity to generate a lead. In a sense, making a cold call is a little like giving someone directions to your house over the phone while they're driving, the analogy being that your goal is to guide them to the destination you want them to reach only by using the words you have available. You have to understand where they're starting from, and if the person gets off the route, then you have to calm them down so they don't panic, and so you have to ask them to describe what they see so you can figure out where they are and get them back on the route. In other words, you have to see the world through their eyes if you're going to solve their problems, and the only way to do that is by asking good questions. Obviously, if you don't adjust what you say or ask in response to their responses, then they'll get off track again, you'll alienate the prospect, they'll get frustrated, and you'll quickly fail. But support systems, practice, active listening, empathy, checkpointing, and note-taking are all important tools for making good cold calls.